Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
First up today, I want to just reinforce on how to find us. The easiest way for you guys is to just go to your iTunes, type A, the number 2, and the letter Z into the search bar, and hit search and scroll down to the podcast section, and you'll find us. We're the only ones named A to Z. You just click on it, you download our stuff, it goes straight to your iTunes account, straight onto your iPod, and you'll be good to go. You can tell all your friends. That's the easiest way for your friends to find us. You can also find us at our webpage. That's A, the number 2, Z, podcastspokane.podomatic.com. That's A to Z Podcast Spokane.podomatic.com. So, now that you guys know how to find us, Zach and I need a little help from you guys. We're trying to design a logo, and we're not quite sure what we want to do. We have a few ideas, but we'd like to hear your guys' opinion. So go ahead and email us at a2zpodcast@gmail.com. It's that simple. We'll listen to anything you guys have to say, and any information or help you guys have would be appreciated. We'd really appreciate it, too, if you guys would start spreading the word about us. Get it out there a little bit. Tell your friends. Have your friends tell their friends. And just help us out. Not all of our podcasts are going to be sports-oriented. It just so happened the way we started and the way the weeks fell, that's what it's going to be. But we're going to be doing lots of other stuff, video games, movies, and everything like that. So definitely tell your friends about us. This week, though, is another sports week just because of the way it fell, and so we're going to talk about Seattle basketball, the Blazers, a little bit of snowboarding. We're going to do some more Seahawks stuff, and then everybody knows it's the Super Bowl, so we have these really fun things called proposition bets, and we're going to do that at the very end of our show. So if you guys aren't interested in the Seahawks or anything that we're about to talk about, just skip to the end of the podcast and still participate with us, because we have 5 really cool, fun bets that you don't even have to be a fan of football to enjoy, and we'd really like your input and feedback, and it's just something fun, and you would just answer our questions and go ahead and send it to our email. That's a2zpodcast@gmail.com, and that's the number 2. First up, we're going to talk about Seattle basketball. It's coming back, and It's a great feeling.
Well, maybe. We'll see. The trade's not officially done. The Maloofs, who own the Kings, haven't officially sold it yet. It's sounding like it's more and more like a done deal, but it's being sold to a guy named Chris Hansen.
Correct? That's not the guy from Dateline NBC.
Not the guy from Dateline. Different guy. He's like a hedge fund guy. But you know what? If it is brought back, that's awesome. I do have some problems with it, not from getting a team back to Seattle, but actually the team itself. I think you got the roster there.
I do. It's got a few pieces. It's kind of a little rough. We have Aaron Brooks, or not we, but the Kings do. They have Tyreek Evans. They have DeMarcus Cousins. And, of course, they have Jimmer Fredette.
I mean, who doesn't want to watch
the prize? Prize jewel.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to watch a guy who can't play defense and just jacks threes all game? DeMarcus Cousins is a bit of a head case, not really a fan. And then Tyreek Evans is, he's all right. I just don't think he puts it all together. So if it does come, why not trade a bunch of the pieces? Like trade Cousins for a super high lottery pick, try and get 2 high lottery picks, and really start the franchise right in Seattle.
Right. It's definitely a possibility. You know, the team might not be the greatest, but at least we're taking a step forward. And I want to say thank you to Chris Hansen if this does all work out, because it's awesome for Seattle to get a team back. I know he lives in San Francisco right now, but it's a great thing for him to do for a city. They're gonna play in Key Arena for about 2 years while the new arena is built, and that was the main bone of contention. Why the Seattle Supersonics left in the first place. And they are going to keep the name Supersonics, mind you, which is kind of cool. But I think you're right. You do have to try to get as many high lottery picks as you can, because that's really your only option. And that kind of leads us in to the Blazers situation, where they're a good young team. It's just they're in that poor spot in the NBA where you're not an elite team, you're not great, but you're also not bad enough to get a good lottery pick.
Yeah, right now, as today of the recording of the podcast, they're the ninth seed. They're at 22-22, which is just puts them out on the edge of the playoffs, which is like, it's the worst place to be in the NBA. Like, let's say they make the playoffs as the eighth seed. So what, they're going to get blown out 4-1 against the Thunder or the Clippers? It's not a good place to be. We got Damian Lillard, a kid I'm really high on. But every Blazers fan I talk to just asks, how long are we going to have this kid till he decides to leave to a bigger market? So it's the thing that sucks about living in a small market city. But you know what? I'm really excited about him. The great thing about this Lillard kid that he's done is he's taken the leadership role away from a player like LaMarcus Aldridge, who he's probably my least favorite Blazer. He's really good. He's one of the top three power forwards in the NBA, I would argue. But I just don't think he fits in Portland. I don't think he wants to be here even necessarily. So I would argue trading LaMarcus Aldridge and tanking the rest of the season, trying to get a high lottery pick. And a lot of fans are going to hear that and think, that's crazy. Why would you ever purposely throw away a season? But you have to look 5 years down the road. Getting the eighth seed this season, what is it going to do for you?
Nothing. You're just going to get spanked.
Yeah, but if you can get another high lottery pick or trade LaMarcus Aldridge for, say, a player like Kevin Love, who I'm a big fan of. He's a Portland native. He's from Lake Oswego. He's really talented. I think he's having a really hard time in Minnesota. Doesn't like the direction the franchise is going. So, you know, he gets a rebirth in Portland. LaMarcus gets a rebirth in Minnesota. Now, this trade's never going to happen. It's purely a fan trade that I'd love to see happen. But if it did, that would be, I mean, awesome for the Blazers, I think, to have a local kid who's back here. I mean, Kevin Love had like a 30-30 game last year, which never happens. Hasn't happened since like the 70s.
Right, so pretty much what you're saying for both the new Seattle team, if we do in fact get it, and the Blazers, is you need to trade away the one good piece that you have, more or less, and get as high of a lottery pick as possible along with your own, so that way you can get one to two more pieces, because that's what you need in the NBA, is at least three solid pieces. Otherwise, you're kind of SOL. And that's sort of where the Blazers are right now, is they have like that one to two really good players, and then everybody else is sort of okay, and they're stuck in middle ground because they're not going to be able to draft that next big player. And so you're right, being the eighth seed, it's not going to do anything for you. You're stuck in no man's land.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I would never advocate losing a season on purpose, but you know, sometimes you got to take one for the team or take one for the fans, you know, and in the long run, it would be better. Like you said, you can't be short-minded and look at what this season's about. It's all about future seasons. So
exactly.
So, you know, big news, Seattle's probably going to get a basketball team back. Let's hope so. The Maloofs aren't exactly the most trustworthy when it comes to big deals like this, but it really looks like it's going to happen, and I'm excited. Moving on from basketball, I think you have a fairly interesting story about snowboarding.
Yeah, I have a report here. It's comes from an article from the New York Times stating that snowboarding is losing its popularity, why skiing heats up. It throws some stats around that the total number of days that snowboarders going to resorts has fallen from 7.6 a year 15 years ago to now 6.1 days per year today. Now, while skiing, on the other hand, has remained a constant 5.5 days per year for the past few years. So skiing has leveled out and snowboarding has fallen in popularity.
All right. Well, I got a question for you, sort of. You and I, we snowboard. And at the mountain, most of the older generation, or older than us, they seem to ski, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And they have kids. We don't, obviously, right now. But when you ski, you usually bring your kids up and you want them to ski.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're snowboarding, your parents usually aren't involved. Such like my parents, we never went to the mountain ever. And if I recall correctly, your mom and dad didn't go that often. Your dad did, and he skied, but he then switched to snowboarding and enjoyed it more. But kids that usually snowboard don't have their parents with them. They usually, you know, have to try to get to the mountain themselves, or they have to tag along with friends. So do you think that snowboarding might be decreasing because the kids don't have as much money to go because their parents aren't totally in support of them, whereas kids that are skiing, their parents are usually more involved with them at the mountain, and that's why skiing's kind of leveled off and stayed the same, whereas now that the economy's sort of doing bad, nobody has money to go, so the snowboarders are kind of...
Yeah, the thing that this article never factors in is that, like, it's tough to get up to the mountain. Lift tickets are well over $100 a day for most places. I mean, gas is ridiculously expensive. I mean, we in Spokane, where we were kind of spoiled, because from my old apartment, we could be on the ski lift in 45 minutes, all if traffic was permitting, you know? So we were pretty fortunate there, but still too expensive because you got to get food, you got to have the gas money to get up there. So I don't think it factors in that part. But it does bring up one interesting point that the first generation who started snowboarding now from the early 90s now are in their late 30s, and they've kind of not retained those people. But a new generation will always come up and fill the void. I mean, the most popular action sports star out there is Shaun White, and he snowboards, and he's very, very popular. So whatever you think about him personally, you can't deny that he's very, very popular and influences kids to pick up a snowboard.
Yeah, for sure. I just think, you know, snowboarding's not going anywhere, and neither is skiing. It's just snowboarding experienced such a boom for so long that it was bound to dip off or level off eventually, and we might just be seeing that right now. You know, just sort of leveling off.
Yeah, I got the stat right here. From 1988 to 2004, the sport grew in 300% in participation. So, I mean, that's a big boom for any new market to withstand. And, you know, it may be leveling off a little bit, but, I mean, that's 7.6 down to 6.1 is still more than skiers go at 5.5. So,
sure. So the article might be a little misleading. It's like, oh, snowboarding's on the decline, whereas skiing is still less popular than snowboarding, yeah, even when snowboarding is on a decline.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's just days per visit for each person, you know?
Sure, yeah. So, looks like snowboarding's really not going anywhere. You know, it's just kind of interesting. I think it probably has more to do with the economy and just the price of lift tickets nowadays. And like you said, getting up to the mountain, it's just getting ridiculous.
Well, moving on, we're going to kind of move to the Seahawks. We're going to cover one of our favorite websites, that's SeahawksDraftBlog.com. And the guy on there, Rob, he's one of the best Seahawks writer out there, personally. And we're going to cover his mock draft and kind of go through his picks.
Yeah, total. Mad props to Rob Staton. Definitely visit his website, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Like Zach said, this is where we're getting all of the stuff from right now. So, mad credit to him. He's amazing. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in. His mock draft, he's got Kansas City at number one, taking Matt Barkley. And, you know, I have no objection there. I think, you know, Andy Reid, he's got to take a quarterback. So
yeah,
Matt
well,
Barkley's as good
thoughts.
As any.
It's either draft a quarterback or draft the best player available. And one last thing before we really start diving in is Rob is not so much about accuracy at this point in his mock draft and more about just creating talking points about, like, saying this is the need, and then as it gets closer to the draft time, then he refines it more for accuracy.
Yeah, of course there's still free agency to be had and everything like that, so we'll see what happens. This is totally just like a rough sketch, and like Zach said, it's all talking points. Nothing is set in stone yet, really. So Number two, the Jacksonville Jaguars. He has him picking Bjorn Werner, defensive end from Florida State. Now, for us Seahawks fans, this is somewhat of a pivotal pick because they could go for a defensive tackle, which is what we need. But the more pressing issue for them is pressure from the ends. So Bjorn is about as good as it gets. He had a 13.5 sack season, so I'd say that we'll probably be safe, but this is a pick to definitely watch out for. At number three are the Oakland Raiders, and once again, they're a defensive tackle needy team. Rob has them picking Star Lutalele, defensive tackle from Utah, and while Star doesn't exactly fit our scheme perfectly, he's still an animal, and he'd be good, but Oakland could go a lot of different ways here. They also need a defensive end, but they do need a QB too, even though Carson Palmer's played fairly decently up until now. He's just not the old Carson Palmer before his injury.
Yeah, it all depends on what happens in free agency, because Oakland's in cap hell. The ghost of Al Davis is like looming over them and makes it very difficult for them to make any moves. So if they can re-sign one of two of those DTs that they could lose, then it may change their pick, and then that all, I mean, the less D tackles get picked, the better it is for us, and the greater chance of a good one falling to us at 25.
Exactly. Oakland also has a need for a left tackle, so the next pick, which is the Philadelphia Eagles, Rob has them taking Luke Jokiel, tackle from Texas A&M. Now, he can move up a spot to the Oakland pick, but Philly could also take a defensive tackle. You know, Chip Kelly, this is his first year, so if Jokiel did fall down to him, this is a great first pick. We all know Philadelphia's line is terrible, so this is a good stepping stone, and, you know, this is what Chip Kelly really needs to start the franchise off right. It's what Seattle did, so why not? At number five are the Detroit Lions. They pick Demontre Moore, defensive end, Texas A&M. This guy had a pretty good year down in the SEC, 12.5 sacks, pretty impressive. This really depends on whether or not the Lions lose Cliff Avril in free agency. So we'll see what happens there.
To me, it's just how many first-round draft picks are they going to dump in that D-line? They went from dumping every first-round pick they had into wide receiver to now dumping it into D-line. I mean, it's like they need a cornerback desperately, but hey, you know what? I'm not running their franchise, so.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, it really depends on what happens in free agency. If they keep Cliff Avril, then, you know, chances are they're probably going to look elsewhere, but if they do lose him, that's a big need. At number six are the Cleveland Browns, a franchise that I actually kind of feel a little bit of a connection to just because of where they are. And Rob has them taking Chance Warmick, guard from Alabama. This kid is incredible. It's going to be a good pick. It really solidifies their offensive line.
He's probably the best player in the draft, right?
He's up there. I don't know if he's the best. I think he's top five for sure. So, I mean, at six, are you getting a bargain? Maybe. But it's still a great pick for them and definitely will help Trent Richardson, you know, a rising star in the league, help out. At seven are the Arizona Cardinals. They're in between a rock and a hard place because they need a QB bad. Rob has him taking Eric Fisher, tackle from Central Michigan. Now, this kid lit it up at the Senior Bowl. He was described as the best player there, which is saying something. So, it's a good first step for the Cardinals. I mean, they really, really need a quarterback. But, you know,
part of
you
their
also
quarterback
need...
problem is not being able to protect one.
Yeah, exactly. You need somebody to watch your quarterback. So, this is as good of a pick as you can get besides a quarterback. I mean, they've really tried their best to figure out the quarterback situation, but obviously it's not going
well there.
Plus,
this is
one
of the weakest quarterback classes in recent memory.
Well, I don't know so much if it's weak. I just think we are all maybe spoiled because last draft class was so phenomenal that we're like, oh, this one's weak. I think it's on par with probably what normal quarterback draft classes are. I think last year we were just spoiled. Moving on to number eight are the Buffalo Bills, and now they're picking a guy at this spot that I really, really like. His name is Alec Ogletree. He's a linebacker from Georgia, and he is phenomenal. If he somehow fell to the Seahawks pick, I would absolutely jump out of my chair if they picked him. So
He fills every need we have at that last linebacker spot. Leroy Hill's a free agent this year. We'll probably lose him. I mean, it sucks, but what can you do? But this guy can do everything. Awesome in coverage. Elite pass rusher. I mean, great at stopping the run. So if we could get him, unlikely as it ever is, but it would still be an awesome pick.
Now, number 9 are the Jets, and the Jets are a disaster, so really almost any pick would work out for them. Rob has him taking Barkevious Mingo, defensive end out of LSU. Now, this year, he didn't have a spectacular year. He had a good, solid year, but last year, he had a better year. But he'll definitely come in. He'll definitely help out Rex Ryan's defense. They need all the help they can get. It's as simple as that. The Jets are a disaster. They got the work cut out for them. Now, at 10 is another team that we should probably keep a close eye on, a Seahawks fan, are the Tennessee Titans. In Rob's mock, they have him picking my favorite player for us to pick in the entire draft, and that's Sheldon Richardson. I want this guy more than any other guy. If, for whatever reason, the Titans decided not to go to defensive tackle, they also need some help at D-end, cornerback, and offensive tackle. So that's something to look for there. The problem is Sheldon Richardson is so amazing that at the 10th spot, it's probably a done deal. I can't imagine him getting out of the top 10, but he is the guy for me. What do you think?
Oh, he's if we could get him, it would take an elite defense to the next level. If he could be everything that he's looking like he could be. Sure. Obviously, he could bust, but, you know, I'd love to see him follow the Seahawks, but I think short of us trading up to get him, it's not going to happen.
Right. At 11 are the San Diego Chargers. Rob has him taking Lane Johnson, tackle out of Oklahoma. Now, this kid was number 2 at the Senior Bowl, and that's totally fine because he is another great offensive tackle, and you know, you can never have enough good offensive tackles, so he's going to the Chargers at 11.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, so why not draft an offensive tackle?
Yep. And at number 12, we have the Miami Dolphins. Once again, another team to keep an eye on because they're losing one of their defensive tackles, possibly, to free agency. A guy that, actually, I think the Seahawks should take a hard look at. But the Miami Dolphins are taking Cordell Patterson, wide receiver, Tennessee, at number 12. He is the biggest playmaker in this draft, bar none. The only problem is as a wide receiver, he doesn't exactly have the greatest hands, and he has a lot of lapses of concentration when he's out playing. So I think he can make a difference. The problem is I think he's either going to be phenomenal and great, or he's going to be a bust. He has trouble kind of dealing with defenses, reading the defense, and I don't know if he's going to be able to deal with the complexities of the NFL or not, but we'll find out. I mean, I think at 12, it's a little risky, but go big or go home, right?
Yeah, high risk, high reward.
At 13 are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they're selecting D. Milliner, cornerback, Alabama. Now, if you need a cornerback in this draft, this is the kid that you want. He is the complete package, and for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it's phenomenal for them. It's practically a steal. It is a steal. It's not practically. It is a steal if they get this kid at 13. If he slides down this far, they should just throw their card up there right away. It's a done deal. He's that good. So that's what Rob has going on there. At 14 are the Carolina Panthers, and it's kind of hard to believe it, but they're taking Sylvester Williams, defensive tackle, North Carolina, where last year they went into the draft claiming that their defensive tackle spots was something of a strength, and now this year it's one of their biggest weaknesses. So it's something to watch out for. If they don't take a defensive tackle, they could look to a cornerback. So if D. Milliner fell, he could go in this spot, but I find that highly unlikely. But we just got to hope and pray that Carolina goes elsewhere, because that'll mean a defensive tackle makes it down to us more than likely.
Yeah, and see, I don't know. I have a big problem with all these North Carolina guys. The last couple seasons, North Carolina's put at least one first-round draft pick in. They're always projected 2, if not 3. So to see this guy in here, North Carolina has tons and tons of sanctions against them. They I mean, they pay their players. That's what they do. That's how they get all these guys down there. But as a team, they can't ever win a game. You never hear them in a bowl game. But yet, all the tape of their guys is just them dominating. And they play in a terrible conference, too. Probably the weakest out of all the qualifying conferences. So, to see him, I would be very weary, because once he comes to the level of the NFL, and they're like, they expect him to do more, and he a lot of these North Carolina guys just aren't delivering.
Yeah, so far they've been rather lackluster, but what can you do? At 15 are the New Orleans Saints. Rob has him taking Ezekiel Ansah, defensive end, BYU. Now, this kid is really rough around the edges, but his upside is one of the highest in the entire draft. He could be a phenomenal pass rusher. The Saints are another team to look out for. They could draft a defensive tackle, but luckily for us, Sean Payton came out and said that they are switching to a 3-4. So, if they did draft somebody, it'd probably be more like a nose tackle, one of the bigger gentlemen, so that really wouldn't affect us.
Yeah, they did just fire Steve Spagnuolo. He was with the Rams, and then he was their defensive coordinator. He was just, they were one of the worst defenses of all time, ever. They let up more yards than anybody. They were only outscored by one other team in the NFL. So to switch to 3-4 is a big step. We'll see how it goes for him. But, you know, good luck.
Yeah. At 16 are the St. Louis Rams. Now, they're taking Kenny Vaccaro, safety from Texas. This kid's pretty good. He reminds me a little bit of Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is definitely quicker. He's a little bit smaller. I like Earl Thomas more. Earl Thomas is obviously an elite player. I don't know if Vaccaro's going to become that or not. We'll see, but a good pick for the Rams. It'll take their defense in the right direction. At 17 is Kevin Mitner, linebacker, LSU. That's for the Pittsburgh Steelers. It seems like the Pittsburgh Steelers are always churning over the linebackers. They always seem to have some really good ones. So this could be another good pick for them. He's a solid linebacking prospect. So he'll come in, fit right in for the Steelers, and, you know, he'll be another great Steelers linebacker. At 18 are the Dallas Cowboys, and they're picking a guy in Barrett Jones, who's a center from Alabama, but that's a little bit misleading because he played every position on the offensive line for Alabama, so he's really a plug-and-play guy wherever you want him. He's a good depth guy, and if you need a center, he's one of the best ones there, so...
Exactly. Plus, he's from Alabama, so you know he's well coached, and he could be a starting center for 10 years. Wouldn't surprise me.
So we'll see what happens. Cowboys need a lot of help too. Up next are the New York Giants at 19. They're picking Jonathan Cooper, guard, North Carolina, another North Carolina player. The Giants, they're kind of hot and cold, so this pick could help them out. Their offensive line is definitely up and down, but I don't know. Like Zach said, those North Carolina kids, there's just something about them. I'm not quite sure. At 20 are the Chicago Bears. Now, they're picking another kid that I really, really like, and if the Seahawks picked him, I'd jump up out of my chair and scream. And that's Zach Ertz, tight end, Stanford. I really like him. Plays hard. He's a good pass catcher. He's a pretty good blocker. I mean, he's not the best blocker, but he definitely can hold his own, and I think he'd fit right in our system. He'd be a good player. We talked about him in our previous Seahawks episode, in our very first episode, so if you want to hear more about him, go ahead and flip on back to that, and we cover him in there. That's Zach Ertz, so I really like him. 21, the Cincinnati Bengals are picking Deion Jordan, defensive end from Oregon. This guy is one of those athletic freak types. He's like 6'7", and just an animal. He's going to go into the combine knowing if he does well, he's going to make a payday. So he is going to be one of those fast risers if he does good at the combine. He has really good coverage skills. His pass rushing is a little lackluster, but you can absolutely fix that. He definitely has the strength to be a great pass rusher. He just needs a little bit of coaching. He'd probably be better off in the 3-4, but you probably could play him in the 4-3. He's just one of those physical freaks. You can make it work.
Yeah, he's from Oregon, so Chip Kelly saw something in him, so I'm sure there's something there.
At 22 are the St. Louis Rams again, and they select Jonathan Jenkins, defensive tackle from Georgia. The Rams just hired Rob Ryan. Rob Ryan in Dallas ran the 3-4. So the question is that what the Rams are going to switch to? The Rams have a lot of pieces on defense, so they can make it work, but if they do decide to switch to the 3-4, they do need a big nose tackle. They already have Long, Quinn, and Brockers. Long and Quinn are two really good pass-rushing defensive ends, or they could switch over to linebackers in the 3-4, and then Brockers you have to play. And he was a little rough around the edges coming out of LSU last year, but he's actually played pretty good in the NFL up until this point, so they definitely have something there in St. Louis. So at 23 are the Indianapolis Colts, and they select Travis Frederick, center, Wisconsin. If you watched the Pro Bowl, you saw Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday take a snap together, and it just shows you how important the bond between center and quarterback is. So this would be a good step for the Colts with Andrew Luck and start building some chemistry.
Yeah, and Wisconsin has really turned into like the lineman factory. They have tons of guys on tons of rosters playing across the NFL. I mean, Joe Thomas, probably the best left tackle in the game. He went to Wisconsin. We have John Moffitt. Tons of Wisconsin players go and play in the NFL. And they're just really good linemen.
At 24 are the Minnesota Vikings. They're selecting DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver, Clemson. This is another kid that if the Seahawks picked, I'd be totally okay with. He's not, going to be a Megatron, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be a phenomenal wide receiver. He does everything really well, so he's definitely one to keep your eye on. Minnesota, though, could go defensive tackle, so it's kind of a sticky situation with them. They have the Williams Waller. They did, and that's kind of crumbling all around them. We'll see what happens, but as of right now, it's projected wide receiver Hopkins.
Yeah, this was a guy that I highlighted. He had an awesome, awesome bowl game, and if the Seahawks drafted him, it would be an excellent pick.
Up next at 25 is, of course, the Seattle Seahawks. Rob has us taking Sharif Floyd, defensive tackle, Florida. Of course, there's the Dan Quinn connection back to Florida, and this kid is really good. It's supposedly being said that a lot of front office execs say he's going in the top 10. So if we were able to pull this one off, it'd be amazing. Like I was just saying about Minnesota, if a talent like this fell, say a Richardson or a Floyd, the problem is Minnesota would be hard-pressed to pass on them for a receiver like Hopkins when there's still a person like Floyd or Richardson on the board. So they would probably pick him right before us, and that would be terrible if he got cherry-picked right out from under our noses. So what I think we should do is trade up into the high teens or the early 20s and get that player before it gets down in Minnesota. Otherwise, they're going to get poached right from underneath our nose. So something to keep your eye on, but Sharif Floyd is definitely, definitely somebody that could come in and fill the spot and fill it well. At 26 are the Green Bay Packers. Rob has him taking Jesse Williams, defensive tackle, Alabama. This kid is a freak, and not in a bad way. He is super strong. I think he's from Australia, and he played rugby, and he hasn't been playing football that long. It's rumored that he's probably going to break the combine record for reps on the bench, so keep tuned for that. But yeah, he's just ridiculously strong, and he'd be a great fit for Packers at end, and he definitely would help Clay Matthews out. At 27 are the Houston Texans, and they're going to be selecting Jonathan Hankins, defensive tackle, Ohio State. Rob's not a big fan of him, but if you need a defensive tackle or a nose tackle, this is the guy that's left. I mean, and not in a bad way, but the Houston Texans, that's kind of what they need. Their defense, while good, was lacking in a few spots. So at 28, the Denver Broncos are picking Xavier Rhodes, cornerback, Florida State. If you watched any of the playoff games, Denver got beat pretty bad by the Ravens on that last-second touchdown pass, and Champ Bailey is kind of on his way out.
Yeah, and with Champ Bailey getting older, he could be an awesome mentor for this kid, show him the right way how to do it. I think it'd be a smart pick.
Yeah, definitely. There's been some talk that Desmond Trufant, is moving his way into the first round. Maybe that's an option here. I don't know, but we'll see. At 29, the Patriots are selecting Matt Elam, safety, Florida. Now, for me, he's the best safety in college right now, even better than that Kenny Vaccaro kid. That's just my opinion. I think it's a great fit for New England. They really need some help out there, but there have been some rumors
of Ed Reed going to, because we'll talk about this in just a few, but basically the short end is Ed Reed going to New England.
Yeah, so, you know, if that happened, obviously the Patriots wouldn't need to draft a safety, so we'll see what happens there. At 30, they have the Falcons taking Jarvis Jones, defensive end from Georgia. Now, this is an interesting pick because Jarvis Jones is an elite talent, definitely top three for this draft class. So you kind of wonder, why is he being picked at 30? Well, the problem is he has spinal stenosis, and that is a disease where your spinal cord kind of shrinks, it kind of deteriorates a little bit. And that's not to say he's not going to have a productive NFL career, because it's definitely possible. It's just that
he'll have a short one.
Exactly. You draft him knowing if you get 6 years, you really got lucky.
And if he can get 10 sacks a year, you know, then you got a great deal. It's just the risk. But at 30, what else are you going to get?
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons, do they really have many bigger needs than the fact that they need to get to the quarterback? And this guy is going to do it for him. So it's a good fill for them. And as long as Jarvis Jones checks out medically, he'll be picked. He could even be picked higher. All it takes is one team to fall in love with you. But if he doesn't clear medically, he's going to be in for a long and hard fall. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. Now, at 31, the Baltimore Ravens are selecting Manti Te'o. And I'm not really sure what's going on with Manti Te'o, what, you know, if there's really something wrong with him, or if he really was duped, or I don't know what the deal is with his fake girlfriend. And I mean, there's more than meets the eye in this story, I think, for sure.
Yeah,
so.
And normally I would say any guy with character concerns, you can go to the Baltimore Ravens and not have a problem, because Ed Reed and Ray Lewis are so strong of leaders that they could fix any problem that a guy has. But those two guys are going to be gone next year, most likely. Ed Reed, let's just say that Ed Reed's gone. So then what leader is left to show Manti how to do things? There's really nobody, and that's bad, bad news. He, when left to his own devices, you obviously see that he makes up fake girlfriends and tries to win Heismans that way.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. I don't know how much I like Te'o, and not only just based on his personal problems, but in the championship game against Alabama, he just totally looked out of place. And granted, that's what Alabama does, is they make everybody look out of place. But at the same time, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Last but not least are the San Francisco 49ers. And Rob has them picking Detone Jones, defensive end UCLA. This is a guy to look out for, because he could definitely rise up the board and take a spot where a team could maybe need a defensive tackle, but instead they pick this guy, or they need a defensive tackle and a defensive end. And this guy definitely raises himself during the combine, and he gets picked earlier. So he's a guy to watch out for. His name's Detone Jones, so just, you know, be prepared. He might get picked earlier during the day, and that's probably a good thing for us Seahawks fans. So that's the mock draft that we just went over. That's Rob Stanton over at Seahawks Draft Blog. Go ahead and visit that place. It's a great wealth of knowledge and probably my favorite Seahawks site. Just recently, I discovered this cool new rating system, sort of, and it ranks all the Seahawks players 1 to 57, because 57 people are on the roster, and it ranks them on their importance to the team. It's based on several factors. The most important of these factors is how big of an impact they have with the team, and that takes up 30% of the total. Next is how hard that player would be to replace. That takes up 25%. The potential for growth, so is this player maxed out on how well they're going to play, or do they still have room to grow? That's a 20%. And then age is 15 and health is 10. So you rate each one of those five choices on a scale of 1 to 10, and then you put it into a little formula, and that gives you a player's score out of 1 to 10. And, you know, the higher you are, the more important you are. So, now, all the credit for this, of course, goes to a guy named Brian Nembozer, and his website is hawkblogger.com. So I would definitely encourage you guys to look at this. It's really, really cool. But Zach's going to go ahead and read off the top 10 players for the Seahawks right now.
Yeah, these are the top 10 players that is projected for the Seahawks in rank of importance. Number 1, pretty obvious, Russell Wilson. 2 is Earl Thomas. 3 is Richard Sherman. 4 is Max Unger. 5 is Bobby Wagner. 6 is Cam Chancellor. 7 is Russell Okun. 8 is Zach Miller. 9 is Bruce Irvin. And 10 is KJ Wright.
So, there's the top 10. What do you think was the most surprising thing about the top 10?
That, I'd say it's Bruce Irvin being included. I can understand why when I think about it, but a player like Marshawn Lynch being number 20, when you think of all the things that Marshawn Lynch has done for the team.
Right. It's kind of strange to look at it, you know, right here at 14. Jeremy Lane. While he did come in and he played very well in the absence of Brandon Browner, is he really of importance number 14 on our team? I mean, that's a little strange. Even Anthony McCoy at 13, you know, he's had a lot of pivotal drops. So is he really the 13th most important player? I guess, too, you have to realize that this is all Brian Nemhauser's opinion. Of course, this isn't going to be exact, but I think he did a really good job.
Yeah, that's really interesting there. Ones, I mean, there's some that are right in the fandom, like Marcus Trufant, number 56, hurts really bad. But it is what it is.
What hurts Trufant the most is the fact that he got ones in both his potential growth and it hard to replace. I mean, true. I mean, he's not a hard guy to replace, and he is maxed out. He's not going to really grow anymore. It doesn't take into account his leadership role. I think the effect that he's had on Richard Sherman has been really, really important to this team, because Pete's a great defensive backs coach, and then you have Marcus Trufant to help you out in practice and to talk about stuff and learn coverages, and I just think stuff like that you can't measure on how important he was to the team.
Exactly. And I think Bobby Wagner at 5 is a bit shocking. I think if we spent a first-round draft pick on another middle linebacker, he may not have exactly as great of a season, but he'd have 85% as great of a season. But I don't think that Bobby Wagner's the fifth most important person to our franchise. Sure. We could lose Bobby Wagner and it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Right. And the way that it's broken down on this chart is the top 10 are your core players that you absolutely have to keep. They are the heart and soul of the team. And then 11 through 31 are high-value players. They're super important to your franchise. You can definitely lose a few here and there, but you want to try to keep as many together as possible. After the high-value are the medium-value players. They're kind of like special teams guys, a little bit of filler, you know, not important. They definitely get traded and cut a lot, and then there's the bottom of the barrel players, and they're, you know, practice squad guys that just made the team, and I mean, Leon's in that, and that's mainly because his potential is bad, his replacement is poor, you know, his age is also poor. The only thing he really has going for him is his health. He seems to stay healthy after he had that gruesome leg injury in New York.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But it's kind of interesting to see the difference between the top 10 and then the drop-off between 10 and 11, because it's kind of big. Like, say the difference between number 10, KJ Wright, and number 9, Bruce Irvin. KJ Wright has a total score of
8.07,
and Bruce has a total score of 8.10. So that's a difference of 0.07, whereas the difference between number 10, KJ Wright, and number 11, Sidney Rice, it's KJ Wright at 8.03 and Sidney Rice at 7.85. So it just kind of shows you the drop off between who he considers our top 10 players and sort of everybody else. There's quite a big cutoff.
Exactly.
I really don't have too much of a problem with this. I mean, obviously Russell Wilson is number 1. He's 10 across the board. aside from
age,
his age, which he has a 9 out of 10. He has a 10 out of 10 health, 10 out of 10 impact, 10 out of 10 growth,
and I'm sure
10 out
that
of 10
was
replace.
Changed because a guy having a perfect score in your thing probably doesn't look so good.
Yeah, exactly. So, Earl Thomas, he's number 2. I have no problem with that. The only thing that he got downgraded in that he didn't get 10 out of 10 in was his potential for growth, which is an 8 out of 10. Which,
yeah. I mean, he's made the Pro Bowl all the last 2 years, so what can you expect?
Yeah, number 3, I agree. Richard Sherman is probably top 5 player for us right now of importance. I have no bones to pick with that. Max Unger is number 4. He's definitely important. Like we just talked about, the center quarterback exchange is definitely an important part of your offense. So I'm fine with that.
He was an all-pro this year, so what more could you ask?
Yeah. Like you said, Bobby Wagner at 5 is probably a bit of a stretch, but I agree with his age. His age is a 10 out of 10. He's young, and he has stayed perfectly healthy. That's a 10 out of 10. His impact, I'd probably agree, was an 8,
Mm-hmm.
He did play very well. His potential for growth, 9.
But see, 9, that means he would be a top 10%. If we're using the 10 out of 10 as top 1%, so he's saying Russell Wilson is going to be a top 10, top 5 quarterback. And then he's saying that Bobby Wagner is going to be a top 10% linebacker. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think Bobby Wagner is going to be an awesome player for us, but I don't think that he's going to be like Brian Urlacher.
But he's not comparing it really to the league, I don't think, though. He's comparing it just for our team. So he'd be like a top 10% linebacker for our team.
Yeah.
So I can kind of understand that. But I agree, too, that if we drafted somebody, he probably would have had about as good of a season as Bobby Wagner. Maybe better. You never know. At 6 with Cam, I'm totally fine with Cam there.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're not super high on him.
I just thought he took a slight step back this year, but, he still played awesome.
Yeah, I think he's definitely... I think keeping together Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman is super important to the future of this team, so...
Oh, definitely.
I'm good with that. We have Russell Okung at 7, and I'm fine with that, with him being at 7.
He should be higher, but the only thing that gets knocked is his health. He did have problems staying healthy.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a tough spot at the beginning of his career, but he seemed to work out the kinks now, and that's fine. Works for me. I pray that James Carpenter can pull out what Okung did and just start getting healthy, because that would be a fearsome left side if we could have that going on. At 8 is Zach Miller, and I'm totally fine with that. He is one of the better players on our team. The only thing I don't like about Zach Miller is his crazy contract that we inherited from the Raiders. Not my favorite thing, but he's earned every penny of it. Would I like him to take a pay cut? Yeah, totally, so we could sign more guys or keep some of our guys, but did he earn his money? Yeah. At number 9 is Bruce Irvin. And like you said, it's a bit of a stretch. He didn't play as well as I wanted him to in the Atlanta game. It's kind of tough. I don't know if he's exactly like the cornerstone of our future. Do I think losing him would be detrimental to this team? Maybe not.
That would be a waste of a first-round draft pick. I just think the 9 hard to replace is a little bit overrated.
Yeah, you got a 9 out of 10 on difficulty to replace, which, I don't know. Is it difficult to find a good pass rusher? Yes. Was Bruce Irvin a good pass rusher? I could argue not, because he got nearly half of his sacks in one game against the Packers. So, that's my only problem, is that he had a good year, statistics-wise, numbers-wise, but in actuality, when he needed to bring pressure, did he really?
No.
Not. But it's his first year, so, come back in year 3, and we'll revisit this one on Bruce. And then number 10 is KJ Wright, and I'm pretty good with that. He did a phenomenal job last year. He did another good job this year, so I'm fine with him. Do I think if we lost him, it'd be a total disaster? No. But would we feel it? Yes, we would.
No, definitely.
So, It's a pretty good list. I like it. I think it's interesting that, you know, Malcolm Smith is at 21. He did play fairly well this year, but is he at 21? I don't know. And, you know, Matt Flynn is at 30, which backup quarterback is pretty important, but, you know, difficulty to replace is at an 8.
I don't really buy that. The one I have a hard time right now is Walter Thurman III. Guy has played like 3 games in 3 seasons. How is he the 23rd most important player to our team?
I mean, his health is a 3, and I'd argue his health is a 1.
Yeah.
He's been hurt as often as he possibly could be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's definitely showed something when he was out there, and I like the kid. I mean, I wish he was healthy and playing good, because I really want him on our team. I love the WT3, but, you know, what can you do? I find it interesting, you know, that John Ryan is 32, but he has a 1 out of 10 for his potential for growth, you know, which is, I mean, John Ryan's as good as John Ryan's going to get, so that's for sure.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite Seahawks just because he's always doing well, more or less.
He's consistent.
Just, yeah, so I like that.
But it's a good little read. I recommend. That's at Hawk. blogger.com, so go ahead and check it out.
Yep, once again, credit to Brian Nemhauser. He definitely did a good job. I would highly recommend you guys check it out. It's a cool list. You could even do that with your own teams. If you're not a Seahawks fan, if you like other teams, go ahead and enter it in. You could pull up your team's roster, go to Excel, put them all in a spreadsheet, pick your own numbers, and use his formula, and you guys will go ahead and get your own values, and it's a cool thing, so I would highly recommend you guys check it out. Moving on, a little more Seahawks news. There's been some rumors floating around, Zach.
That Darrell Revis is on the trade market, and the Seahawks are one of the teams looking to buy.
Now, I don't know if I totally buy into the fact that the Seahawks want to buy. Do I feel like they're involved? Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubting the report at all. And that's just how we are as a team, you know, leave no stone unturned. And how often do you really get a chance to go out and get a superstar in its prime?
Exactly.
Not often, but...
If J.J. Watt was to come available today, every team would be on the phone trying to make a trade.
Exactly. And, I mean, as long as his knee checks out, I'm sure he'll still be a phenomenal player. But, I mean, what are your feelings about this trade?
If it happened, it would be one of the rare times that I completely disagree with Pete Carroll and John Schneider. I think it's a marginal upgrade over Brandon Browner for what you'd have to pay. How much is he going to be asking?
He was asking $16 million, and that's more than, or about double.
From the next highest,
which is.
I mean, I think one other cornerback has 11-year incentive base. But base salary, I think Champ Bailey is the highest paid at $8 million. So almost double to get paid for, and you know, that's only going to shoot the Seahawks in the foot. Because when Richard Sherman comes open on the market, he's an elite cornerback now. So he's going to be demanding that price. And you can't pay $32 million to one position.
Exactly. It's just not happening. So whatever you pay Revis, you're going to have to pay Sherman eventually, if not more. And so if we could get Revis for a decent trade, I would think about it. You know, I'd be hard-pressed to find a first-round pick that I'd be like, oh, he's going to produce as much as Darrell Revis has. I mean, that's just something you can't do. Would I be a little disappointed if we got rid of our first-round pick this year? Yeah, I would, because I really like some of the guys in this draft. But Revis is one of the best cornerbacks to ever play the game. So if it was just a straight first-rounder, I might think about doing it. But I definitely would have some heartburn. I mean, that's just me.
Yeah. And, I mean, you've read the comments on there about this. People are freaking out, overexcited about the prospect of getting Darrell Revis. And I just don't get it. I mean, I've seen people online saying, like, if we got him, he would make our D-line automatically play better. And that's not true at all. It's not how it works. Now, if your D-line plays better, it automatically makes your cornerbacks better because they don't have to cover as long. But if your cornerbacks are better, there's only so much time they can cover out in the open field before their guy gets open. Like, it's why we wasted Marcus Trufant. And it sucks. Like, when you are an elite cover corner, you can only cover for 4 seconds, maybe. And if the DB and if your D lineman don't get there, it doesn't matter how awesome you are. Eventually, the wide receiver gets open.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if we have Sherman, Revis, and Browner, and then Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor out there. If you give Tom Brady 12 to 15 seconds each play, he's going to pick you apart. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know, to me. And I would rather spend the money that we could spend on Revis and put it towards a defensive tackle, you know, like a Melton from Chicago or a Randy Starks. Yeah, I'd rather put it towards them. You know, why not take what you would trade to the Jets, and you'd actually probably need to use way less, and trade up in the draft and get somebody like, you know, Sheldon Richardson or something like that. Why wouldn't you do that instead? I mean, I totally understand why they're doing it, though. You know, you just always inquire, you know, better to ask than not to ask.
Because the other two teams involved are Denver and San Fran. And if it's San Fran and we can drive up the market a little bit, then that's only good things for us because that's less draft picks for the 49ers.
Yeah, and, you know, the new GM for the Jets was our, you know, cap space salary manager, you know, Jim Eidetz. And, you know, it could just be like a friendly thing, like, hey, we're going to try to get an extra third rounder out of San Fran for you guys, or, you know, just trying to help them out. The Jets are in a really bad spot, and they definitely need all the picks they can get. So I think we're just in there trying to see what the other teams are feeling out, especially the 49ers. They're our biggest competition in the entire NFL, and they just so happen to be in our division. So, of course, we're going to try to go in and see what it is. And wouldn't you want us to try to keep Revis out of San Francisco? How crappy would it be if Revis went to San Fran?
No, I mean, it would suck, but I mean, this is what the NFL is. It's smoke and mirrors, and it's only, you know, who knows, they may not end up trading Darrell Revis, but so we'll see.
Yeah, so speaking of San Francisco, they're playing in the Super Bowl this weekend, and you know, like any true sports podcaster, we should probably make a pick. So who do you got?
All right. Actually, you know what? I want you to go first.
All right. It absolutely pains me to say this, and I don't want to make you guys think that it doesn't, because it does. I feel like I'm ripping my heart out of my chest right now. I can't stand it. But I have to pick San Fran just because I think they're a little younger, a little more hungry, and I think they're just a little bit better of a team. That's all. So I'm picking San Fran 28-17. That's my pick. You heard it here first.
All right. I'm picking, there's only one pick in this game, and that's the Ravens. I'm calling it right now 24-17. This game is, just say it out loud. The Ravens haven't come this far to lose the game. Ray Lewis's miraculous last season where he tears a tricep, an injury that would knock out everybody else for the season. He comes back for the playoffs, and he hasn't come this far to lose. This is my prediction.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is my prediction for the game. Colin Kaepernick's going to get hurt. He's going to come out. Alex Smith is going to come in. Alex Smith is going to go throw a pick six to Ray Lewis to win the game for the Ravens.
You know, I kind of see where you're coming from. Well, I don't kind of. I absolutely do. I mean, it's theoretically, or it is for sure, because Ray Lewis announced his retirement, but Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, pretty much the heart and soul of the Ravens team. It's their last time playing for the Ravens.
Probably the greatest middle linebacker that ever played and the greatest free safety that ever played, you know? Like,
yeah, so you're betting against him? I guess I am.
My MVP pick of the game is going to be Ray Lewis.
And see, it's hard for me to really pick an MVP. It's tough. I cannot pick Colin Kaepernick. I can't stand the dude. So he's definitely not my pick. I'm going to have to go with Michael Crabtree. I think he's going to catch 2 to 3 touchdowns, have over 100 yards. That's just my feeling about it. We'll see what happens. I do think, though, that the Ravens match up fairly well against San Fran's defense. The Ravens are fairly similar to the Seahawks as a team. They have a strong run game. They like to take their shots downfield. They have decent receivers, good jump balls, you know. We all saw what Seattle did to the San Francisco 49ers at home, so why can't the Ravens do that to them in the Super Bowl?
Only time will tell. We'll fill you guys in on next week. And now, to the end of the show, and probably the most entertaining, is we're going to be talking about some prop bets. Now, I'm getting these off Grantland.com. It's a website run by Bill Simmons, awesome podcaster and columnist. This column's written by Bill Barnwell. And if you don't know what a prop bet is, it's more like a joke bet. Some of them are a little bit more serious. And most of the ones in this column are, they're mostly like, who's going to score first or who's going to have more yards and stuff like that. But these are the 5 prop bets for people who hate football but watch the Super Bowl anyways.
Yeah, so this is for most people that, you know, you're stuck going to your friend's house or you're with a bunch of friends and you don't really care about football. This is something to keep your eye on, and I very strongly encourage you to email us. Once again, that's a2zpodcast@gmail.com, and email us with your thoughts. Zach's going to ask you 5 questions here, and all you have to do is put the number 1 through 5 and write down the answer that you feel to each and send it off to us, and we'd really enjoy to read that and share it with everybody on one of our next podcasts. So go ahead, Zach.
All right. The number 1 is, how long will Alicia Keys' national anthem go on for? The over-under is 2 minutes and 15 seconds. So if you think that the national anthem will go longer than 2:15, right over or under 2:15.
Yeah, so just like Zach said, just next to your number 1, all you have to do is write over or under, depending on if you think she'll sing longer than 2 minutes 15 seconds or under.
Number 2, will Beyonce be joined on stage by Jay-Z during the halftime show at any point?
So that's simple. Just put yes or no next to the number 2.
All right. Will Beyonce's hair be straight or curly at the beginning of the halftime show?
There you go, straightforward. Next to number 3, put straight or curly.
All right. Now, you can really write any color you want for this, but what color will the Gatorade liquid be dumped on the winning head coach be? And we'll just give you a couple examples. You can really write any color. Will it be clear / water, orange, yellow, green, red, or blue?
Yep, so write whatever color you think the Gatorade bath is going to be in, and that's your answer for number 4.
And number 5. How many times will the game be referred to as, now there's a lot of options here, so I'll just name a couple, the Harbaugh Bowl, the Har Bowl, or the Super Bowl during the game? The over-under is set at 2.5, so if you think it's only going to be mentioned twice, pick the under, or if it's 3 or more times, pick the over.
Yeah, and like Zach said, there's a lot of different options. If you don't know, the two teams are being coached by brothers, which is why this bet is here. So anything that pretty much refers to the bowl having to do with their last name, we're going to count it. So whatever you feel. Once again, I ask you guys, please take part in this. Email us at a2zpodcast@gmail.com. We really want your guys' feedback. Also, please spread the word to your friends, family, anybody you think would be interested. I know it's been kind of really sporty lately and a lot to do with the Seattle Seahawks, and I know not everybody likes that, but we definitely are doing other stuff. We're going to do lots of video games, lots of movies. That's all coming up, so just spread the word. It's really, really easy to get us. Almost everybody has an iPod. All you got to do is go into your iTunes, type A2Z, that's the number 2, into your search bar, hit enter, scroll down to the podcasts. We're the only one. You just download it. You could even set it up to download every new episode that we get as soon as it comes up, and I'd recommend that you guys do that. I'd really appreciate it. We just really want to get out there, so please help us out. We can only do so much, and we'd love you for it if you helped us out.
Also, include any ideas you got for our logo. We got a few, but not any great ones. So if you got something, shoot it our way. We'll try and consider it.
Yeah, or if you're a phenom with Photoshop, go ahead and whip us up something. A to Z podcast, you know, we live in Spokane and Vancouver. Anything would help. We're just trying to figure out a good, clever logo that really would help us get out there. So anything you send us would be appreciated. And like I said, just spread the word. We'd love you guys for it. So once again, thanks for listening to our podcast today. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
And we'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Later.